right, we'll go ahead and get started. Thanks, everybody, for coming. This talk is called Fortune and Glory, Kid, Fortune and Glory, Choosing Wisely with the Windows Store. I'm Sid Millett. I'm a Vice President and General Manager of North America for Enfusion. If you guys have heard of us, we've been a longstanding Microsoft partner. We like to live on the bleeding edge of technology, and Windows 8 is the latest new thing, although I feel like we've been doing Windows 8 since before this time last year, so it's not super new to us anymore. But we're all really excited about the launch at the end of October. You guys probably are already familiar with all of our social media hashtags, etc. I put out a tweet this morning, and keep them coming. It's very much a social event, talking, sharing. These are the two hashtags that you want to utilize. Keep the conversation going beyond this talk and this afternoon. Feel free to reach out directly to me with any questions. I'll be around to chat afterwards, but also hit me up on social media as well. Today, what we're going to cover is a few different things. So we're going to go through the Windows Store. We're going to talk about discovery a little bit, how people find your apps, what's the best ways that you can position yourself to be easily discoverable. We're going to talk a little bit about the reach and the value proposition with respect to the Windows Store specifically, especially comparing and contrasting other marketplaces that exist today. Talk a little bit about the economics and some things that are slightly different in what Microsoft has done with their Windows Store. Talk a little bit about business models, different ways you can generate revenue and maximize revenue. Another big thing that Microsoft wants to do is be very transparent with respect to their terms. Why things are the way they are. Unlike other companies, they're not wanting to promote any kind of secrecy and be very transparent and open. And then lastly, just talk about the opportunity in general. There definitely is money to be made. There's marketplaces only launch every once in a while, and to a certain extent, a number of them have already kind of launched. So I don't know how many more instances there will be of this kind of quote-unquote land grab opportunity that happens when a marketplace first launches. But there definitely is, we're at the dawn, or we're in one of those cycles right now, and we still are very much at the beginning. So Microsoft is reimagining a partnership. What does that mean? Talking about the Windows Store, because Microsoft, is creating the Windows Store after some of these other marketplaces have already existed, as well as they've got hands-on experience with their Windows Phone marketplace from a number of years ago. They're able to kind of take that feedback and really build a marketplace that potentially gains the benefits of hindsight from these other players or other marketplaces that exist. The key points from how the Windows Store works is itself is Metro style or Windows 8 Store style, as it's now called. In terms of how it's presented, so it looks like it looks and behaves like other apps. It does have recommended top apps, different categories. We're going to go through a little bit of that in a demo shortly. You guys have probably already played with Windows 8 Store and looked around. I can give you some other kind of tips and tricks. It's got the tight IE10 integration with Deep Links. We're going to talk a little bit later on about the opportunity, but basically there's 200 plus markets that Microsoft launching in, 100 plus languages. Microsoft, and especially Windows, is very much a global product, probably more so than any of the other platforms that exist out there. As well as we'll talk a little bit about enterprise distribution and for any of you folks that are part of enterprises and want to develop apps that are in a store-like environment, but obviously catered just to your employees, that is a really big space as well. Enfusion specifically deals with a lot of customers that are large enterprise customers. They might have themselves 100,000 employees. So in a way, that's bigger than some countries and definitely bigger than a lot of cities. We're going to talk about the flexible business models, free, paid trials, really big area that's somewhat unique to the Microsoft marketplace. Third-party in-app support. Again, transparent terms. I already talked to you about that a little bit. We're going to talk about the WAC, the Windows Application Certification Kit. Tracking progress, getting feedback in the dashboard, and then the quote-unquote best economics that the Microsoft platform offers in terms of 80% revenue share versus more commonly 70% elsewhere. So let's jump right into it, discovery. I'm going to start with a demo. I'm going to switch over here. I've got my live tile kind of interface here flowing. I've got my little kid there and some of my other friends popping around. I can then go ahead and launch the store. You'll see here that I've got a little two, which basically means that I've got two updates kind of waiting for me up in the top corner. I was in the store earlier, so I'll just start it from scratch. When you start up the store, it grabs your region of whatever your Windows device is set to, and then it goes to that localized version of the store. One of the interesting things that's pretty cool with Windows is that you can swap regions fairly quickly, fairly easily, and switch between the different local app stores, and they'll actually have different highlighted apps. If you switch to the UK store, the prices are very clearly in pounds. And one of the things I encourage when you're considering going to the store, especially in a multi-global environment or multi-markets, is to have a play and do some research and education around those different regions, see what's highlighted in those regions. In some cases, there'll be more opportunity in one region over another. So what you've got here, basically, is at the beginning, there's this concept of Spotlight. So these are kind of the globally spotlit five key apps that are there, as well as links to top free and new releases. And then as we browse to the right, we get into the different individual sections, whether they be games, social, entertainment, photo, music and video, et cetera. And there's you know, 8 or 10 core areas. What gets spotlighted in the top one here, as well as in the individual categories, is generated by a third party, unbiased. You can't pay to be featured. iCookbook can't be up there, no matter how much money they have. So what that does is it sort of levels the playing field between yourself and the big guys that can afford to kind of buy the space. And Microsoft feels very strongly that it maintains that kind of independent, unbiased piece. Other marketplaces have this as well. It's not necessarily unique to Microsoft, but as you've seen from other research produced, if you get your app kind of spotlit here, you're going to notice a massive spike in terms of your downloads and your reach that your app's going to get. So in the end, really, if you can build a great app that is compelling, this third party will realize that and will push your app either to being highlighted in the master one here, which is a really big deal. You got big names here like Living Social and Office Depot. But you can also be highlighted within your individual area. So for example, health and fitness might be a smaller area. It might be a little bit easier to get into one of these three places. And what you want to do in your research is take a quick peek at who else is in there and maybe figure out why they're there, if they're good or not good, and set yourself some lofty goals. When you jump into an individual section, so for example, health and fitness, what this will do is it now sorts all the apps in that section. In this case, there's 414 apps. There's this concept of noteworthiness. Sometimes it's a little bit difficult to figure out the exact algorithms that are used behind the scenes to generate it. Usually it's a combination of rating and downloads. But then you can also filter and or sort by different options. Highest and lowest price, maybe you just want to see free stuff. There's usually that option as well. Free and trial is a really big deal as well. We'll talk about that a little bit later. When I want to drill into an app, I can get a details page, very similar to sort of the Windows Phone Marketplace. If you've been there, you can install it, or it'll say you already own this app. You can provide several different screenshots. So you can see here I've got four screenshots, as this shows. And then to move between those, I can just tap across and browse through those screenshots. The details screen is mainly just covers what other locales you might be available in based on language, and then reviews is where you actually get the written reviews, which is not to be confused with the number of ratings. So in this case, this app has 7 people who actually wrote something, but 20 people who have voted on it. Last but not least, the one neat thing about the store, if you want to share your app with other people, or if you want to promote your own app, say on your blog or on your Facebook or other social media, you can utilize Windows 8 built-in share mechanism. So what this will do is the store subscribes as a share producer and will link with various what I call share consumers in the share charm. So I've got Twitter on here. I've got Evernote. I can just do a straight-up mail as well. What this will do is it will open up a little mini mail client in the right-hand snap view panel. It will then show me what my mail will look like, and it puts together this cool little thing with a link, the title, a thumbnail, and then you can go ahead and put that out there wherever you'd like to kind of drive additional traffic. It's interesting because this link that you find does go to a web page where you can get that information. But the Windows Store itself doesn't have a fully baked out web presence yet. It's in the works. So it's not quite the same as the way you can browse, you know, like an iTunes, for example, on the web. But there are individual pages for all apps that are web accessible, even from non-Windows 8 devices. Best way to get that link is to actually just mail it to yourself from here. We'll talk a little bit about search later on as well. So with that, I'll jump back to the presentation. And we'll talk about reach. So, Windows Store has unprecedented reach. What that means is Windows, unlike other platforms, you know, the numbers speak for themselves in terms of the amount that Windows is deployed across the world. And Windows 8 is, albeit very, very new and very bold, is still Windows. There's a huge expectation of the uptick that they're going to take. Although it was released just recently in October, you will start to see numbers, real numbers, coming out from various you know, research firms, et cetera, discussing how much people have actually uptaken it through the holidays, through the Christmas period. Gartner expects it to be you know, installed on sort of 300 million machines within the first year or so, but that's just an educated guess by them. But we'll start to see those numbers for real shortly. You can put your apps in 100 different languages. You can sell your apps in 200 different markets. You can have local pricing in 70 different markets, which includes all the top 40 as far as the countries that have a high GDP. And you can get paid in kind of different currencies as well. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. 70% is the revenue sharing. I'm sure you guys have heard about this. Sort of industry standard as far as marketplaces go. The difference that Microsoft is doing is that once you hit a $25,000 threshold, they've kind of, you know, at that point they're going to give more back to you in terms of relaxing that to 80% and giving that 80% totally back to you. It makes a big difference. If you actually do some math in terms of, let's say if you sell $1 million in revenue, the 70% versus the 80% actually means that you're going to get an extra $87,000, roughly $87,500. So it's not chump change. It does seem like a lot to when you look at $25,000. Am I going to make $25,000 from my apps? What typically is seen when you do some research around app marketplaces in general is there's a whole lot of apps that are kind of at the bottom that don't necessarily make a lot of money, because everybody can submit apps. But the apps that do kind of cross the sort of $1,000 mark as far as revenue, there's almost like a middle ground where apps don't make sort of $1,000 to something, where if you hit that threshold, then usually you boogie right through that into kind of the stratosphere. So there's this, you know, if you did a graph of apps that exist, there's this weird set where there's a lot that are down at the bottom and don't necessarily make a lot of money for whatever reason. And if you can get your app to be one of these great apps that truly provides value, you won't just be kind of mildly successful. Usually you jump straight into the really successful. It's a little bit strange that way, but importantly, it's those people that are going to really benefit from the extra 10% here. And it's those people that are also giving the most to other competitors if they stay at the 70%. You do need a developer license. There's two different ways you can do that. You can buy an individual or a business. You know, in general, if you're just developing apps by yourself and you want to make some money on the side, individual is the way to go. If you've already got a company set up, if you're a consultant, or if you've got some sort of business doing other things and you want to also sell Windows 8 apps through that company, you can register as a business. They will ask for some forms and proof of business entity existence and tax things and things like that. Infusion as a company, for example, has registered as a business, so we can deploy apps under our name. Whether or not we care to sell them is almost independent, but you will need to sign up, and these are the two models. Pricing. So ultimately, that decision is up to you. Microsoft does provide some guidance and, in theory, a range. So $1.49 on the low end and just under $1,000 on the high end. Unlike a lot of other app stores or marketplaces that exist, a lot of them are, you know, 99 cents is that sweet spot, or that bottom. They sometimes say a race to the bottom, and there's a lot of apps out there that sell for whatever that minimum amount is. Microsoft's view is, with Windows is very much a desktop operating system. It has been for, many years, and it's proven to be a productive tool versus sort of a more of a personal operating system. And as such, lots of money has been made through enterprise software over the years, and Microsoft's view is, you know, $1.49 is more appropriate than 99 cents as far as the minimum amount, and by kind of making that a rule, it kind of forces the ecosystem to not race to the bottom, if you will, down to 99 cents, which would naturally happen if they didn't put a limit in place. Yeah. Let's talk about business models. So we've got some flexibility here. First up, you can, using your existing commerce. So in some cases, especially businesses, they might be already selling stuff, and they might have a system for selling their product or their service through the web and or on other platforms, and they want to repurpose that and kind of keep the stuff that they put out on the Windows Marketplace flowing through that same common system that they've probably spent a lot of money building, and it's much easier to maintain and everything else for that business. So Microsoft very much supports that. You can use that existing relationship or existing subscription base that you've got or other consumable purchases. So examples here, print and media and magazines come into play. Like you can, for example, if you had a Wired magazine subscription already, or if you want to buy individual issues, and Wired already has a place existing for that today, they can reuse that. Infusion built the Telegraph UK application, which is a big newspaper over in Great Britain. They give that app away for free, and they sell subscriptions. So you can read so much online content for free, but you can also purchase subscriptions, so they can utilize that existing subscription model as per normal. And things like eBay as well might want to use their existing commerce. Obviously, eBay very much sells things, through their website using a very sophisticated system. If they want an auction system, they want to use that same piece. Ad-supported, so lots of apps out there are ad-supported. It's pretty popular. You can build your own ad system, but quite honestly, I think the statistics from the marketplace for Windows Phone is something like over 95% of the applications that are ad-supported utilize the ad control that Microsoft offers. It takes the vast majority of the work out of there. You can simply throw in the appropriate tags after you download the ad SDK. We'll talk about it a little bit later. And those ads will start appearing, those ads will start driving traffic, and those ads will generate checks back to you in form of payment. If you guys have played like Wordament, for example, that's a really good game that produces by Microsoft. It has kind of ads at the bottom as you're playing that are local, actually. Like sometimes I'll be sitting there and they'll be selling stuff in Oakville or Toronto, which is kind of neat. Trials and one-time purchases. So you get a lot of flexibility with trials. It's not simply like include a trial or don't include a trial. You can include a trial and you can choose if you want it to be a week, a month, or some other means. There's quite a few options in there. I'll show you some screenshots a little bit later. You can also differentiate features through trials as traditional, but it gives you a little bit more flexibility than other marketplaces, which almost their best practices release a light version or a free version and another one, and you'll see them side by side. And to a certain extent, they're two separate apps, and they are. Whereas with the trial functionality, you can make it so that you only necessarily have to deploy just the one app. That way, your ratings aren't spread across two different apps in the marketplace, and you're able to drive a bit more behavior. And you can actually code against that trial functionality within your actual app, and I'll show you an example of that a little bit later. Purchases over time. This is interesting in terms of being very innovative. So what Microsoft allows is you do things like rent something within your app. So you can provide a way of allowing users to purchase something. Maybe it's a book, or maybe it's like training material or something like that. If you had an app, you could actually sell them access to something for some period of time and then have that revoked, again, within the app itself. And you can provide those purchases and then expire those purchases, all leveraging the platform, which is something a little bit unique and a little bit new. You could also do things like premium subscriptions. So maybe your app is a paid app, but then within the app, you might be able to upsell something else or something else with a time period again on it if you'd like. Talk about trials a little bit more, because I think this is a really big deal. Trials really matter. They've done some research looking back at the Windows Phone marketplace, which I think was really kind of the first main marketplace that maybe offered trials and really gathered some great intel for Microsoft as a business, which again, like I said earlier, the benefits of hindsight, being able to bring that into the Windows Store. So first things first, if you have a trial version of your app versus people who don't have a trial version, they generate 70 times more downloads by having that trial version. And this is hard data. Based on, you know, all the apps that are in the store. Sure, some apps are better than others, and that'll drive different things, but looking at the entire ecosystem, you get 70 times more downloads if you offer a trial versus not. In general, that trial download, approximately 10%, just about 10%, get converted into a purchase, often within the first few hours of download. So the idea is by offering a trial, it makes the barrier of entry virtually zero for somebody to click install. And when they click install, if they like it, then they can immediately buy it. And that's typically the behavior that they see, you know, which, if you think about it, is not that dissimilar than if you just bought the app straight out and downloaded it without a trial. The difference is when people have to buy it, they think more about it, and hence you get 70 times less downloads. So by offering the trial, you'll still often get the money, especially if you think about getting 70 times and then, you know, 10% of those convert. You know, this ultimately leads to 10 times more revenue in this scenario, if you can offer that trial, and it'll drive a really good behavior in terms of getting your name out on your app a little bit more, getting more feedback, more ratings. Ultimately, you're going to drive up your downloads, and then that will have that follow on through. We already talked a little bit about time limited trials and feature differentiated ones. I've got some extra reading kind of in the notes that I can send out as well, in terms of giving you a little bit more insight on how to best take advantage of trials and some of the insights that Microsoft has learned. Here's an example of no code is the key highlight here. When you're setting the price of your app, you can have your trial actually never expire, and then in code you can check for a trial version and then limit functionality that way. Or you can offer a trial expiry concept, which maybe means you don't actually limit the functionality in your app, but after one day or 30 days, that trial would then expire, and when you run that app, it sort of asks you to essentially uninstall it. trial conversion. So here's an example where you can kind of grab your product information when you're running your app. You can figure out if you're in trial mode in code, and then, you know, do something so you can ask them to purchase it. You see that all the time. Hey, you're running in trial mode. Would you like to purchase the full version? And then if they do say yes to purchase the full version, you can kind of grab that and jump into that piece as well. I've got another example here of in-app purchases. So basically, if you're in a trial mode, you can then load the options that are available for you in terms of subscriptions or what other products that you kind of are offering within the actual app itself to buy, and then you can figure out if those products are active or not, and or go ahead and purchase them. So if they don't have that particular product that you offer, then you can run through the purchase scenario. It's all fairly easy. The idea being that Microsoft is trying to provide in the platform as much of the boilerplate, similar kind of logic that all developers would write. So you guys as programmers really need to just take that guidance, make it so that it takes you, you're spending more of your time and effort focusing on what your app actually does and offering that functionality to the user rather than integrating with the ecosystem or dealing with standard stuff, whether it be ads or trial and or licensing pieces that are really kind of common. This talks a little bit about kind of your proxy XAML file that you put together as part of your submission. So in here you can kind of indicate the piece that kind of comes down with all the pieces, and that's what you're iterating through in code. Let's talk a little bit more about ads. So you can do your own. I'm not going to spend too much time about talking about your own kind of ads, but you certainly can put those in. But there's also Microsoft Advertising, which is a separate kind of business unit within Microsoft that has some pretty extensive kind of functionality that it offers up to you. It does drive monetization of your app. You get paid in your local currency. You get some rich reporting about who's clicking on ads, which ads, et cetera. The ads themselves are generally given to you by the ad control that you integrate. So you simply download the SDK, pump in your little snippet of code to put the ad where it makes sense in your app. And then, by and large, most of the other stuff is kind of taken care of for you by the platform. There's a bunch of different ad formats you can use. There's the idea is you want to kind of keep the user within the ecosystem of your app and not necessarily send them out to other websites, etc. That ad SDK is available today. You can utilize it in XAML or HTML. So what do you need to do to put it in apps? First thing is you do, go download the ad SDK. You add a tiny few lines of code to your app. You then need to go on to this thing called PubCenter, register yourself as a user on PubCenter. You generate an app ID from there, and then you can utilize that in your actual snippet that goes in your app, and then you publish your app up to the App Store. Provide that data to kind of tie together your entity on the marketplace and App Store to your entity or user ID on the PubCenter. And then, therefore, you can go on to PubCenter from there on to kind of track your success, et cetera. PubCenter is really more of a Microsoft or a Windows advertising thing, which is really agnostic of the platform. So, for example, it'll be the same across Windows Phone and Windows Store, as well as other places you might use Microsoft advertising. Hence, it's not kind of baked into the Windows Store dashboard itself, because it's not necessarily specific just to the Windows platform. Transparent terms. So we talked about Microsoft in general kind of changing their tune over the past number of years to be a very open kind of company, embracing the openness of the technology sector in general. They've made a lot of successes there, I think, versus sort of the old days. What you see here is kind of the WAC, if you will, as it's called for short, the Windows App Certification Kit. The idea here is, rather than submitting your app to a marketplace and kind of crossing your fingers and not really sure what's going to happen, they give you this tool. It's the same tool that gets run on their side when you submit it. So really, you should run the tool and make sure it passes on your own local thing prior to wasting any time uploading it to the Windows Store. It'll kick out reports of anything that might fail, and it'll give you strong support around fixing those issues. So it'll tell you what the issue is. There's generally blog posts and guidance and support on the web that will help you drive through those common issues that you potentially are doing with your app that are not supported by the marketplace or store. And there's other information out there giving you context of why they don't allow that. So again, in the name of transparency, your app is failing because of XYZ. This is how you fix it, but also here's why we're doing this, why we're not allowing you to do what you're trying to do. There's generally a good reason for it, and they want to be very open about that reason. Certification criteria. So in addition to the WAC tool, there's sort of a certification process that happens when you submit apps to the App Store. I believe today the SLA is 7 days. So when you submit your app to the App Store, Microsoft is committing to get back to you within 7 days with either your app available in the store or ready to publish, if you will. You still have to go on and kind of publish. Or they'll come back to you saying what the issues are. And there's these people that are currently doing today. They're called Premier Field Engineers. This is all a bit new for Microsoft in terms of how they're trying to provide a lot of guidance and support for the certification process, with a view that's less about Big Brother, I want to own kind of what goes into the store and allow and not allow. The view genuinely is we want to make the apps in the App Store as good as possible and as most value to the customer as possible. We don't just want to completely open it up with no human involvement and then run the risk of it being overrun with a whole bunch of stuff that's not necessarily useful. And you do see that in other marketplaces. So Microsoft is taking a slightly different approach and really offering kind of a personal experience as you go through the App Store submission process. And when they come back with feedback, there's typically two types. There's sort of must-fix items that unless you fix these, you are not allowed to go to the store, which Infusion has pushed 9 apps kind of in the App Store so far, and we've got a few more going through the process right now. And usually those ones are very legit and pretty cut and dry. They also give you a big section of kind of nice-to-have fixes, which, to be honest, when I read some of them, when we first started getting some of this feedback, I thought they would have been must-have fixes, but in some cases they're nice to have, even though I think that you really should fix those, but they're not going to preclude you from pushing into the store. So it's pretty sweet. What it does is it's kind of the best of both worlds. They give you that feedback and that guidance and those best practices, but in a lot of cases they don't mandate that on you, and you can still push it into the store the way it is if you want, but understand that they're trying to help. They're trying to make your app better more differentiated, more in line with what they think apps should look like, which will ultimately drive, in theory, higher ratings and higher adoption and more revenue to you. These are kind of the tenets, you know, display ads appropriately, more than just straight ads or websites. Put the customer in control when they're doing their app. Behave in a predictable fashion so these guys actually run your app and sort of, you know, give it the sort of intuitive test, if you will. Make sure it's suitable for the global audience because it is a global marketplace. And make sure that your app is kind of easily identified and understood. There's also sometimes when you're going through the certification process, it's important that you understand the layout of the store and which section, you kind of say which section your app should belong in, and that needs to be appropriate. You can't build a non-social app and say this goes in the social section or something. They will come back to you with that when they go through their certification. So here's an example of the Dev Center. Any of you got, you know, show of hands, how many have developed kind of Windows Phone apps before kind of coming here this weekend? A couple of you guys, that's great. So I, you know, in a lot of ways, this is very similar to what you're probably used to. You can go on the Dev Center. You can, when you submit your app, it'll kind of let you track your progress against that 7-day SLA. Leading up to launch, literally, we would submit, and 6.5 days later, we would get our response. So they would, you know, kind of come in just in time before the SLA. That probably will be getting a little bit better over time. There is a, you know, there's definitely a burning in period, if you will, with respect to Microsoft and all the employees, as well as the developer community like ourselves. But it'll kind of run through these different pieces and kind of keep you abreast of how your submission is going. Taking it to the next level, you can then see detailed reporting around your in-app purchases, your usage, the ratings, and finance, and you can see, you know, how much money you've generated, when your next payment's going to come out. There's a blog entry as part of the links where you can see kind of the rules around tax submissions and things. So Microsoft, they do expect that you're going to remit tax appropriately on the revenue that you generate. And based on where you live or where you register, they will either do that automatically on your behalf and or send you the forms, or if you're in some of the countries that are not covered, which covered countries include US, Canada, all of the EU, some of the Nordic countries that aren't part of the EU, Switzerland. If you're in any of those countries, they will hold the tax back and submit it on your behalf and send you the appropriate forms. If you're in some other country that doesn't have those tax treaties with the US, they do kind of leave it up to you to, you know, on an honor system, pay your own tax. They'll send you the reports of how much money you've made, et cetera, but it is up to you. Transparent terms, you know, the idea is they're simple principles, concise and clear, not necessarily trying to build different terms for different categories. Let's talk a little bit more about opportunity. I said at the beginning of this talk that the opportunity for the Windows Store is massive. There's 500 million machines when they launched Windows 8 that were running Windows 7 globally. And that's a massive number. There's two important bits about that number. One is those 500 million are running Windows 7, which means if you have a piece of hardware that can run Windows 7, it's immediately eligible to be upgraded to Windows 8. So that means there's 500 million machines already in existence, already purchased, already being used by people that can be immediately upgraded to Windows 8, and we're starting to see some of that conversion. What this chart doesn't show is that there's another 500 to 600 million, I think it's 600 million, 1.1 billion total PCs in the world running Windows. Those other 600 million are on an older version prior to Windows 7, but that's not to say that they might not upgrade as well, and or those users, which are 600 million users, may purchase new hardware and upgrade to Windows 8 that way as well. So this almost does a, you know, this is a big number, but it's a very conservative number because it really is only representing the Windows 7 user base. Let's talk about how this compares to the rest of the world in terms of other platforms. So Android is huge. You guys have read all the news. A number of you probably have Android devices. Android phones are massive, hugely successful with 234 million. Tablets, not so popular in terms of Android tablets, 13 million. iPhone, very popular, but I'm actually a little surprised by this in terms of, I would have thought there would be more out there, but there's 120 million iOS devices, essentially was what they're saying by iPhone. 40 million iPads, so iPads have obviously been very successful, definitely more so than Android, and it's a little bit weird how the breakdown happens where iPad actually has more of the tablet market relative to Android versus phone. But the overall summary is those numbers are small. Mac itself as a desktop, and understand that Windows 8 isn't just a tablet play, although that's getting a lot of talk at the beginning, is all about tablets. The Surface RT, it's a tablet. But you're competing as well on the desktop space, and that's a huge market. In the Mac world, that's the 30 million Mac machines that exist. And again, the apps in the Mac App Store are not the same apps as in the iPhone and iPad App Store. There is that split where Microsoft has not done that split. It's one app store for tablet and for PC. And then on the Android side, yes, there's Chromebooks that are out there, but really there's no real Android alternative when it comes to the desktop. You roll these numbers together, 247 million Android all up, 152 million iOS all up, still much, much smaller than the Windows opportunity. So I can't overemphasize the opportunity when it comes to the install base of Windows. All those people are going to get Windows 8. They're not going to know what to do. They're going to click on that store, and that's where the discovery begins. You've already seen them, numerous blog posts. These are the killer apps that you need to get for your Windows 8 device. These are the ones you're going to download. Everybody, when they put on their machine, they're going to hit up the store. They're going to download those key apps. If you're part of one of those key apps, then you're going to see massive, massive uptake. It's simply the biggest developer opportunity ever. Let's talk about resources for a little bit. So I mentioned there's some good places to go for advertising, windowsadvertising.com. The windowsstore.com has a good web presence. One of the biggest things I would recommend to you when going to the store is simply playing with the store, changing locales, playing with different locales. If you speak other languages and you want to deploy your app in languages for those, switch into those locale stores. Like I said, in a lot of cases, your competition is going to be probably the highest in the U.S. Canada will be probably not too far behind, then probably the EU countries. But when you get into some of those other countries that are not part of that kind of, you know, G8 or G20 or whatever you want to call it, I expect the opportunity is potentially even greater because there's less fish in the pond, less people to compete against. And if you build a great app, you can sell it there as well as in the other markets as well. Developer movement. So this is a website, developermovement.ca. Go check it out. You can there's a ton of resources available on there, help and assistance. There's other websites that exist out there, how to build an app in 30 days, and kind of walks you through it, sort of sends you an email every day, to kind of keep you on track, keep you motivated, and really help you kind of move through your process. I know there's a number of folks over in the other room kind of hacking away as part of the competition this afternoon. But there's certainly a lot of opportunity. We're still early days as far as the marketplace goes. And when you go in and browse the marketplace, the numbers you're going to see in the Windows 8 marketplace as far as total apps go is still, you're going to look back on this time and think, wow, that really wasn't too many apps. Now there'll be 50,000 or 100,000 apps. And that's essentially what I wanted to talk about today. I want to touch a little bit on Poll Everywhere. You guys have probably seen this in other sessions. It's an unbiased, third-party polling company, so they don't keep any of your own data. It's really important that we get feedback, not just for myself, but for the Pure Imagination team as a whole, as we want to replay this event in other cities in the future, and we want to make it as great as possible. So do encourage you to go online. I've got a specific kind of URL that you can go to. Like I said, none of your contact information will be kept. We don't really request much. Actually, I went to the survey site. It's really, really short, really simple. There's the URL for this session. So this is Dev6. So just go to winwapi.ca/dev6eval in your browser, and that'll redirect to pollEverywhere.com with some long URL. But if you guys are online now, or if you want to check it out from your phone, do encourage you to fill that out and provide some feedback. Otherwise, thanks very much, everybody. Any kind of questions from the audience? Yeah. I think so. I've tried that a couple times on the phone. I haven't played too much with it with respect to Windows 8, but I'm not sure if in the app you can interrogate the, like if you do a 30-day trial, for example, and the person hits install and they're on day 10, I don't know if there's a way that in code you can sort of say, hey, if they're greater than halfway through their trial, maybe then I want to start creating the prompt rather than sort of annoying them right at the beginning. So I'm not sure if the APIs expose that functionality or if you can get at it a different way by saying, checking the install date, for example, and then maybe doing your own math. So the short answer is I'm not sure. As far as the uninstall, reinstall piece, I would expect that it would save something in your like some remnants somewhere on your PC to kind of close that loophole to prevent sort of the never-ending 30-day trial scenario. That should be covered, and that'll be something that what ends up happening when you download an app. There's no real anonymity, right? So you have to have a Windows Live ID in order to log into the marketplace. And when you download something, that's tracked against your Windows Live ID. So they keep track of what you've installed, when you've installed it. So irrespective of you completely wiping your machine, it's stored server side. And hence they can manage it that way. It also gives them a ton of data, who owns what. The upside also for the user is that as you get multiple devices, when you plug in your when you buy a Windows 8 tablet, for example, and you configure it for your Windows Live ID, it knows what apps you own, it knows your various connections, and it's kind of phenomenal. You sort of take this thing out of the box, pump in your Windows Live ID, and it's half personalized without you doing anything. So it's showing your photos and you're like, whoa. So in that respect, it'll remember those apps, and then it also facilitates app purchases and then being able to sync those, you know, from tablet to work PC to home PC to et cetera, as long as they're all tied to the same Windows Live ID. Any other questions?
So is it like one is it possible to host the same categories?
I don't think so. I think they do limit you to, you have to essentially pick a category that's appropriate for your app, and they double check that. And then you can only kind of live inside of that category. It's very possible that your app would be considered qualifiable or whatever for multiple categories. And you kind of need to decide based on maybe exposure, maybe based on what you think is a greater opportunity. You need to kind of, you might have an app that's like a social health and fitness app. So it could kind of go in both spots, right? A good example of that is, if I jump in here, I don't know why this isn't working, but I was going to show you an app in the App Store that, here we go. So I close this and I go to the store. What's wrong with my computer? Anyway, something's pausing, but Infusion built an app by Johnson & Johnson called the Digital Health Scorecard, and it's in the health and fitness section, but a very big part of it is when you finish your health check, you can share it on Twitter, you can share it on Facebook, you can share it over email, so there's very much a social aspect of it as well. Mind you, most apps are like that today. But social is probably being reserved for kind of social-first applications, if you will. Versus, say, a Wordament, which is obviously very social. You have to be online, and you play it with other people, but it still is a game, so it lives sort of in the game section. Any other questions?
You said the
Yeah, I believe it's per year. That's kind of like a lease model. So originally, they were prior to launch, they were kind of giving developer licenses out for free. So you can, and you'd literally just pump in your Live ID, and then it's like, hey, you've got a developer license. There was nothing to it. I always thought that was a little bit strange at first when I first, I'm like, hey, I expected more questions or something. Why they did that is it was there with the hooks to be able to charge for it, but they deliberately didn't want to charge for it prior to launch to encourage kind of early development, et cetera. But now that pricing is in place, and that's per year. I think that's down from Windows Phone was $99, right? So I think they took some feedback on that. They wanted to lower the barrier of entries for the Windows Store and hence brought it down to $49. And I think that's in local currency, so I think that's 49 Canadian or 49 US, maybe 49 euros, although that's probably a bit more. But right. Yeah. Yeah. The and there's also a difference between sort of Windows if you get a Surface RT device and you want to kind of sideload apps onto your buddy's device or other people's device, maybe at work, it's a good example at Infusion where we wanted to sideload some apps on. You can sideload as much as you want onto a Windows 8 Pro device because part of the Windows 8 Pro subscription includes the ability to sideload apps on there that are signed by anybody, whereas with the RT devices like Surface and other tablets, they do have to have a developer registration in order to put on non-store apps. So we found that, and you might find that at your business if your business is buying tablets. If they're Windows RT versus Windows 8, you have to have a developer license in order to sideload apps, whether they're by you or by somebody else. So that's just something to be aware of as well. I didn't actually have a specific slide in here on the store deployment piece when it comes to line of business, but if you guys are working for companies that are thinking about doing line of business type applications, the internal kind of enterprise store notion is supported through Microsoft System Center Service Pack 1, and what that allows you to do is deploy those apps through System Center, and System Center presents a store interface within your business. So you would actually kind of have two store icons on your live tile setup. One would be the public store and one would be your enterprise private store. And from then you can browse into it. And it's just like a regular store, except it's kind of managed in-house through System Center on premises. No, I'm pretty sure it's independent. So you kind of pick where you want your ad controls to be laid out, as well as you provide your app ID, which then ties into your profile on PubCenter. And some of that profile data you configure might make a difference as far as the ads that get presented, the locale of where the person is running, and or the if they've kind of flagged geolocation as something that they publish and make enabled, the ad center will then leverage those attributes to drive ads specific to those people. So, for example, I was playing Word of Mint the other day, and it came. I don't know if it knows I like wine or whatever, but it came up with sort of a wine advert for the LCBO in my area, and I was like, "That's really local." a little surprising, really. But to answer your question, no, I don't think it makes you get some flexibility in terms of how you configure stuff in PubCenter, but otherwise, what your app actually does, I'm not sure how much the ads necessarily relate to your particular application. Correct. Only during trial, where you would used to see, like, you know, if you program in the ads, but you don't have your PubCenter thing set to go, or you're in dev mode, then it'll come up sort of with the ad saying Microsoft Advertising ad goes here, like a placeholder. But otherwise, yeah, it will. It'll start pushing ads to your device, and as people click on those ads and things, and/or the number of impressions, that drives your revenue. I don't have great familiarity on exactly how much you get paid and how they calculate exactly the monetization from an ads perspective, which is separate from the monetization that you can get from selling your app in the App Store and/or in-app purchases, subscriptions, etc. Any other questions? Awesome. Well, thanks very much. Remember to fill out your evals, and I'll be around if you guys want to ask any kind of personal questions or anything else. Thanks.